Welcome back to Overserved, everybody. I am Ari Bendersky, and I am here, kind of, with my very good friend and awesome co-host,
Maggie Hennessy. Hello.
And we are taking a deep dive with the people behind Chicago's thriving culinary scene. Most weeks, we invite on guests, a chef, a sommelier, a restaurateur, a farmer, or another one of the fabulous people who plies with all the food and drink that we love to ingest to learn more about their story, who they are, why they got into this crazy food world, and what makes them tick. This week, we are excited to have Erling Wu Bauer, executive chef and partner of Pacific Standard Time and The Laurel Room, and co-founder of Underscore Hospitality with us today in our new Zoom format. Normally, we'd like to thank our sponsor here, but as experiential marketing agency Project is in work from home mode, we are also recording remotely as well over Zoom. So while they are not sponsoring this, Zoom, that is, we are thankful to be able to meet up this way. So we want to give a quick shout out to the Project team and hope they're staying safe and doing all right as we are doing the same. Maggie, do you want to do a quick intro of Erling and then we'll jump right in?
Yeah, for sure. Erling Wu Bauer's focus and intensity have driven him to new creative heights as executive chef of Pacific Standard Time and The Laurel Room. After graduating from University of Notre Dame with a degree in philosophy, which is pretty rad, Wu Bauer spent more than a decade rising through the ranks of one-off hospitality group at Avec, Publican Quality Meats, and Nico Osteria, where he was named a James Beard Award finalist 3 years in a row for Best Chef Great Lakes. In 2017, he founded Underscore Hospitality with longtime colleague Joshua Tilden. In partnership with One-Off, the Underscore duo opened Pacific Standard Time, a market-obsessed, hearth-driven restaurant with California soul in 2018. The following spring, PST won the James Beard Foundation Award for Best Restaurant Design. Last summer, the duo added The Laurel Room, a seasonal rooftop spot inspired by California's architecture, cuisine, and energy. Erling Wu Bauer, welcome to Overserved.
Yay! Woo, 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 woo,
woo. Hello.
So, and Erling might look like he's in San Francisco, but you guys can't see that because you can only hear us, but he's got the Zoom background going on, which is kind of fun. These are weird times for all of us. We would normally like to be in the same room with everybody, but as that's not possible because of the COVID-19 crisis, we're doing the best that we can. And, you know, we all know that this crisis has decimated the hospitality industry. And while many restaurants remain open for pickup and delivery service, many more are closed. Things look dire, but many remain hopeful, or at least somewhat hopeful. And we're going to talk about this with Erling to get his take as PST remained open initially to cook set menus to feed families. And this happened for a couple of weeks, but then they decided for the safety of their staff to close, as well as all the other one-off restaurants did. One thing that has been a huge topic of late is what the federal government is or is not doing to help the restaurant industry. Many local and national restaurateurs like Kevin Bame, the co-owner of the Boca Restaurant Group, Jason Hamill of Lula Cafe, and Paul Kahn of One-Off, have been very vocal about how they feel the restaurant industry is basically getting kicked to the curb, despite employing 15.6 million workers and adding $1 trillion to the local economy. They compare this to the airline industry, which has 750,000 employees and has been given a $25 billion bailout from the federal government, while the restaurant industry has gotten zero. Erling, you know, as a restaurant owner, what are your overall thoughts about the situation and, you know, whether it's about the bailout or what's going on?
That's a big question. first of all, thank you guys for having me on. You know, these circumstances, there's really only one word for these circumstances, which is that they suck. We're trying to make the best of it. I'm personally trying to make the best of it. We're trying to make the best of it at the restaurant. But it's really hard. Josh and I feel that, you know, we're consistently given two terrible decisions to choose between, and trying to choose between those decisions on a regular basis is, it sucks. There's just no other word. But we are still doing everything we can to support our staff and to support our restaurant. So that's how I'd like to begin. I'm just kind of dissect what you just referred to, Ari, because it is a huge question. There's a lot of stuff to go over. But with regard to the CARE Act specifically, The issue is with the character as it stands today, and we can get into the other parts of the question that you asked, is that the money that is given, and we were one-off hospitality, Pacific Standard Time, were approved for a loan from the federal government, much of which is forgivable. Hold on one second. Hey, Max, I need you to be quiet, okay? Sorry, guys.
So you're the guys like that you qualify for Payment Protection Program, PPP, which is for
great payroll.
Yeah, the restaurants that have under fewer than 500 employees. And it's especially
correct.
Yeah, so and this also, in case people don't know, what's today, April 17th, the first round of funding, which was something like $349 billion, actually ran out yesterday.
It did.
Insane.
Yeah, okay, sorry, so go ahead.
So the issue as it stands right now, specifically with the legislation, is that once you get your loan, you have 8 weeks to pay it back, because a lot of it's forgivable, right? If you use it for, among other things, payroll, rent, interest, and utilities, the loan's forgivable. And then whatever's used outside of those forgivable boundaries is, I believe it's 1% interest and has to be paid off in 2 years. The problem is that with the state, with the various state restrictions and to speak of ours, I mean, who knows exactly what they're going to be, but the stay at home order that, let's be honest, is probably going to get extended beyond the first of the next month. We're right. Just going to be paying people to stay at home. So we're not going to be able to use that forgivable loan money once we get started again. Right. So what we really need is we're calling it a shot clock. We need that 8 week shot clock to be extended so that we have money to pay our staff when they're actually working, right? The cost of running, everybody is going to have to reopen restaurants, right? And reopening costs money, right? If I would take a shot at it, reopening PST, just the reopening process is going to cost anywhere between $80,000 to $100,000. That's before we make a dollar, right? Most of it is most of that is inventory, right? It's just liquor and food inventory. A lot of it is, I mean, not that much training is going to be necessary. There's not really any build out that has to happen, but we're certainly going to have to buy supplies. And then there's a period of payroll that you have to pay in order to get ready to open, right? So that's what opening costs. And then on top of that, we're not going to open it even close. Like, anybody who thinks the restaurant industry is going to bounce back to 100% is crazy, right? Who knows what the other side looks like, but it's not going to look like it did. And we're not going to be right. able to make as much money. And we have to think about different ways to make money. So all of these things add up to, we need relief once we open, not while we're closed, right? Now, I understand. Go ahead.
Sorry, I was talking to Kevin Bain last night, which, in response to the, I don't know if you guys have read his Esquire article that published yesterday, but it was a really beautiful story about how he had to furlough 1,800 employees the day after his mother died. And so it's a pretty heavy read, and it's a beautifully written piece. But we were talking for a while last night, and one of the things that he was talking about as part of the Independent Restaurant Coalition, which is a council of top chefs and restaurateurs around the country, Will Ghidara from New York, Tom Colicchio, Rick Bayless, et cetera, Donnie Medea. Kevin was saying that they are trying to get a clause written into the CARE Act to, like exactly what you're saying, to start these funds, to start these loans when it gets opened up. So is there anything that, you know, in addition to what, you know, that council, what you guys are doing as restaurant owners, is there anything that that listeners can do, that the general public can do to help support that push to help you guys? Like, yes, you have the funds now, but like you said, it's, what's the point? It doesn't do anything if we're not open and making money.
I do want to straighten out the fact that it does do something. It does get money into our workers' hands, which is a great thing, right? Like, I don't want to sound selfish about this at all. Our cooks, our servers, our dishwashers, our busboys need money. And like, but the large majority of them qualify for unemployment. So they're doing, I don't want to say they're doing good because nobody's doing good right now, but they're doing all right right now.
Are they, do you know like how many of your staff have gotten checks so far? Or are pretty much, has that been pretty?
I don't want to speculate exactly, I do know that the first round of unemployment checks and the first round of stimulus checks went out in the last 10 days, both of them. And there are a good number of our employees who have, there's been a lot of stories about unemployment being all jammed up. A lot of them have gotten through, and a lot of them have gotten through to get their stimulus check as well. But to answer Ari's question, I'll post it on my Instagram right after this, or, you know, I know this is going to be a little bit delayed, but a lot of chefs have Instagrammed or put up a link to the IRC and it takes 30 seconds to fill it out. Tell you where you're from, and you can go ahead and send it along to IRC, who then goes ahead and sends it along to Congress to push for this rule write-in that Ari was talking about, that would start that shot clock that we were talking about once we open our doors to dine in rather than once we get the loan.
Right. One of the things I think that people don't fully understand as well is that you kind of alluded to before, but when you are able to cut, like when restaurants are able to reopen, you're not going to reopen. Like, I think part of PPP's problem as well is that it assumes you're going to hire back all the people that you had working for you on February 15th. But like, if restaurants are, you know, like if you're having to put extra space in the dining room, or if, like, just because people are uneasy about going out to eat in general, like, you're not going to be doing that volume.
So exactly.
We have no, like, there's just so much unknown without a vaccine, without like more widespread testing, that you guys can't just, I think people don't fully understand that restaurants are a cash flow business. You need cash coming in, and it's just not going to be the same.
Right.
So it's not really, I don't know. I think that's so important to internalize, that we as a public are going to have to confront kind of our own unease about going out in public again, and that these businesses we love are going to be dealing with that and sort of more at risk because of that. So
neither Josh nor I mean, everything you said is entirely perfect, right? Neither Josh nor I ever thought that we were getting into this and it was going to be peaches and roses for our entire career, right? Like, I don't want to say we welcome the like, I don't want to like sing this sob story, right? And I don't want to say I welcome the challenge either, because this challenge is not welcome. It just sucks. But to a large degree, like, figuring out how to operate on the other side is my and Josh's responsibility. And although it's going to be an uphill battle, we're as excited as we can be about that. And we understand that the other side is going to look very different. We understand we're going to have to put spaces in between tables. We understand that we're going to have to embrace to go. We understand that we are going to, like we do every day, even before this happened, think about different ways to make our customers happy. And what happens is, when you make your customers happy, you tend to make money, which we need. And we know that's going to be different. What we don't know, which you referred to, is to what degree our customer base is going to be scared, right?
Right.
That's the biggest. And I mean, we chose to close our business essentially because we were nervous about how contagious this virus was.
Yeah.
So
that's a tough choice. Maybe shouldn't be, the onus shouldn't be so intensely on restaurant owners, I think. Like, to choose between your staff's well-being, your financial viability, your own well-being. I mean, right. That's a lot to ask.
I mean, what, just so I can paint the whole picture so you can see a few things, you know, unfortunately, it always comes down to a discussion between, unfortunately, money seems to be the common denominator. And in this discussion, money versus well-being is kind of how you tend to weigh it. Our bank has proved to be a wonderful partner. and gave us a good amount of relief. The CARE Act gave us some hope. We knew that our employees were going to, when we saw the unemployment numbers, plus what the CARE Act injected in addition into unemployment, we felt good about where our employees were going to be. So we felt that we were covered financially on a lot of fronts. Like, and we're lucky. I'm so lucky to work for OneOff, for a corporation who, with OneOff, with a corporation who has resources, you know, like it. Like they're all tough decisions to have to make, and we just chose a certain decision because, we were thinking about the employees that were still working, and you know, my pastry chef was pregnant, is still pregnant, right? And she was working, and we had you know, people who were, no matter how you cut the pie, right? Like, we were doing 200 drive up meals a day, who were interacting with a good number of people on a regular basis, and I just couldn't. It was tough to think about them getting it, right? Yeah. And then what the repercussions would be. And they were so terrible, no matter kind of how you cut the pie. So yeah, it's a bad position to be in. I feel very good about the decisions we've made so far. And we'll continue to just, you know, Josh and I have been really good about just laying out the decisions that are in front of us. Talking about positives, talking about negatives, and making a decision and acting. But yeah, it was a tough decision to make. But you know, we were just listening to what's out there and just trying to react. And that's what everybody in this industry is trying to do right now. It's tough not to, because things change so fast.
Yeah, right.
You know.
Well, go ahead, Henry.
I was just going to say, you know, it is totally reactive, because, like, as you said earlier, and as we all know, like, this was nothing that any of us, no matter what industry you're in, no matter what city, state, country you're in, nobody could have prepared for this, to the extent of how it has really crippled society and, like, forced us all to change and look inside. But I do agree with you. I think that, you know, you guys did the right decision, and, you know, whether it's just like your staff's well-being or your customers or whatever, like, it's a hard decision. You want to do what's right for everybody, but at the end of the day, what's doing right, you know? And I applaud Governor Pritzker and Mayor Lightfoot for shutting down the city as quickly as they did, because ultimately I think that they are helping save lives, which is what you guys were working toward doing when you made that decision. You know, and I don't know if you guys were part of this too, but with OneOff, and I know that they did this with the best of intentions. And I, like, knowing Donnie and Paul and Terry and Eddie to be wonderful human beings, you know, there was controversy this last week with the giving out Mariano's gift cards so people could get food. You know, what are your thoughts, like, what do you say to the people who were the negativity that the backlash that came with that, when ultimately they were trying to just make sure that people were taken care of initially to eat?
Well, and also whether Pacific Standard Time was under that umbrella,
right? Like, yeah,
there was like a disbursement of, I think it was something, what, 80,000 in GoFundMe, that was raised, what, 92,000 so far, quite a lot. And then, yeah, it was given out in the form of Mariano's gift cards, which some workers complained was sort of taking away their choice, because that wasn't part of, it wasn't sort of initially communicated to them. So just, yeah.
So yes, we were very much a part of those conversations. Josh and I were a part of all of them. And let me just clarify what happened. First of all, And then let me comment on the reaction. The first thing we did was we paid all of our employees who were insured. We paid their insurance in April, and then we paid their insurance in May. Right? We assured their insurance in both of those months. I agree, and. I'm not going to name the number because it's no, but those numbers are massive, right? That, like, the insurance numbers, the money that we pay out insurance per month, they're massive numbers. Mm-hmm. And after we did that, what we did was we partnered with Mariano's and paid out. It's not necessarily $100 for everybody. It depended on how many hours you had worked thus far this year, right? And then based on that, we paid out Mariano's gift certificates with the remainder of the money, right? Not all of that money was used for insurance. If you had insurance and insurance was paid, then you didn't qualify for the money. Do you see what I'm saying? So it was mutually exclusive. You didn't get both.
Okay. Yeah.
So that's what we did. And I still, and will always feel incredibly good about that decision. Right. I think that was absolutely the right thing to do. To the reactions, I would say, I get it. I think everybody is stressed out. I think that everybody's perspective on this situation is very different based on the position that you find yourself in. You know what I mean? Like, it's impossible for me to put myself in anybody else's shoes. I understand the reactions. I understand that everybody's scared. I understand that everybody, for the first time in 25 years, is staring at uncertainty economically, right? Like, we've felt so secure economically for so long, and now all of a sudden all of us feel insecure. So I get it, and I have moments just like that, right? I have moments just like that with the government. I have just moments just like that with my partners, to be honest with you. I have moments just like that with my wife. So I understand. I think that's what I'd like to say to the people who reacted like they did. I understand their fear and their frustration. What I would like them to know is that, again, the situation just sucks, and you're consistently trying to figure out how to make lemonade on a consistent basis, right? And
yeah,
we made a decision, and it's the best decision that we could have come up with. So, you know, is it going to make everybody happy? No. I hope everybody feels good about where we came out on this. And I think the most important thing is, like, we discussed it a ton. There were differing opinions, and we finally came to a decision between, I think, you know, there's 7 or 8 of us on those calls. So, I hope everybody can see our logic, and I invite any of our employees to call us and ask us. And we always do. We always talk about our open door, right? Our open phone policy. But that's kind of what I have to say about that.
Would that impact then, as you continue to raise money, people continue to donate, would that impact future disbursements, just like the reaction, or what do you feel?
I would have no comment on that right now. We would have to come to a decision about that as those funds get replenished. And we are selling universal one-off gift cards on all of our websites to that end right now.
Okay.
That's great.
Thinking about kind of just like touching on what you were saying just about conversations, as you start thinking about, you know, getting some funding, paying out insurance, and thinking about sort of with the eventual goal of pivoting to some kind of reopening, are you starting to think again about like maybe incrementally starting to do to go again? What are kind of the conversations that are happening with you guys right now, you and your partners, you and kind of one off as a whole, or whatever you're comfy sharing, but how are you starting to really think about maybe the next step?
From yeah, because I think there's a lot of people out there who, I mean, obviously are missing their favorite restaurants, and you guys have some of the, you know, people's favorite restaurants around the city. And you know, just to kind of give people a little words of encouragement, you know, I was actually just texting with Ina Pinkney just before we jumped on the Zoom, and she sends her love to everybody. And, you know, she was asking about this too. And, you know, one of the things that she asked, and obviously I want you to talk about the bigger picture, but she asked if you guys were going to maybe lower the music when they reopen. People's nerves are tender, and you know, going out will be tentative, but you know, but going back to Maggie's question, you know, what are your thoughts for what's going to happen?
Oof. I mean, we started talking about it before we even closed, right? We just talk about every scenario all the time, and we knew a restart was going to be necessary. We talked about every aspect of the restart, both the logistics. We tried to stay away from the timing because quite honestly, we didn't know about it. But yeah, we are deep in talking about reopening. The truth is that we could have operated this entire time. We chose to close. So we can reopen really whenever we want to for, in Pacific Standard Time's case for the staff, for the family meals that we were doing, which were wildly successful. And we are most likely going to start with those just to kind of get people back to work, get revenue flowing back into the restaurant. And just kind of, it would be much harder to start from zero and go to 60 than to start at 15 and go to 60, right? Get some product in the restaurant, get people prepping, kind of, you know, get your chops back as a cook. That's important too, right? Like, you lose those things when you don't work for a month. Efficiency is going to be down. But also, like, you know, while we're doing these, I hope the governor gives us some idea of when, you know, restaurants might reopen, because then as people are in the restaurants doing these family meals, we can start doing the long-term prep jobs that need to be prepped for the restaurant to reopen. You know, the chef at Pacific Standard Time, Ben Truesdale, and I are already talking about, I mean, for seasonal restaurants, don't forget that the menus are going to be entirely different when we close than when we open.
Right.
Right. And are the menus going to be, as big as they were, right? Like, there's just so many questions that we have to answer. So we're talking about a phased approach. We also have to worry about opening up the Laurel Room for really its second season ever, which is great because we have more jobs to offer, right? There's massive silver lining in the fact that we get to open the Laurel Room as well, but that's going to be as challenging. That's going to be a challenge. And we also changed the concept a little bit.
Can you kind of help people understand, just being primarily a dine-in restaurant, what does it take to do to go? It's such a different animal. And I can you kind of help us just understand from your perspective, just what that's been like, how you think about, you know, the meals, how you're going to package meals, what you're even going to serve people. And also when you, like, you know, just dealing with sort of a decimated supply chain in a lot of sense too, but like, what does it look like to shift to go? How, even just like thinking about packaging all this shit, it's massive.
I mean, the biggest, there's so much, there's many different ways you can do it. Right. So, yeah. I mean, the one way you can do it is you can have your own drivers and have them drive it to the source. Another way you can do it is you can sign on to these delivery companies, right? If you choose to do that, then which delivery company are you going to use? Are you going to be exclusive?
Right? Yeah.
Yeah. We need to talk about that too.
Those drivers are actually the biggest logistical challenge. What door do they come in? How do they pick up? How do we make sure that they get the right meals? The biggest consideration as far as like minute-to-minute operational logistics is the fact that like the actual supplies and packing take a lot of space, right? Yeah,
totally.
And you basically need a set of hands if you become really busy. And if you get really busy, you need more than one hand just to pack bags.
Totally.
Right? Pack bags, label bags. Don't make any mistakes while you're doing it, right? Putting bags in the back, making sure hot foods with hot food, cold foods with cold food. And I think what you said, Maggie, is the most important thing is being primarily a dine-in restaurant.
Right.
You didn't design for this, right? Like, if you're going to be a to-go restaurant or do a lot of to-go, you design for it. Right. And that's great. But like, PST wasn't designed that way. And that's fine too. We just had to pivot, right? And figure out how to do to go, how to have space to go, who was going to package it.
We've all used the word pivot in the last month.
Yeah, I was like, pivot, uncertainty, unprecedented. Let's do COVID-19 PR bingo really quick. Okay, I've got in these uncertain times. I've gotten hoping you're well.
Stay well.
Stay well. Hope you and yours are doing okay.
Oh my God.
I'm just kidding. Sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead.
But all of the above, like, so true.
I know. But yeah.
All right. No more pivoting. So we had to quickly change into that scenario. And then honestly, like, once we had changed into doing a fair amount of just to go for our regular menu, then shut down the restaurant and change into a single meal a day, high volume takeout restaurant, right? What nobody thinks about, I don't want to say that. What most regular customers don't think about is the platform on which you're going to sell it, right? Mm-hmm. Your point of sale changes entirely. And that tends to be the biggest headache. And luckily, I don't have to deal with that because this is why I cook with my hands, because I'm bad at all the other things. But that was a huge challenge as well. Like, how are you going to sell it via your are you going to sell it via your point of sale system? Are you going to take credit card numbers? Are you going to use phone? Are you going to use a to-go platform like Caviar? There's just, and everybody, what I'm really proud of as a professional was to watch all of these restaurants so quickly change what they're doing. I consistently, you know, the family's on a budget, but I like to take a day off from cooking at home one day a week, but I also like to try to support all of these restaurants out there. Right. And, you know, just to see and look at with pride what, you know, what my colleagues are doing in this city, curbside pickup. You know, I got Galit last week. I got SKY this week. I want to get Parachute next week. The list goes on and on and on. Yeah. And it's just amazing to see creative minds. I mean, it's amazing to see creative minds at work when they're forced out of their format, you know? Right. You know, Jen Kim at Paso Roto has done some really fascinating things too. So there, I guess there is some silver lining, or maybe I'm just trying to color things silver aggressively. But yeah, it's been the change from what we did to what a lot of us are doing right now is massive.
This crisis favors the scrappy. You
know, it's like, so true though. It's like, you think about like what so many people did in the beginning, like what you guys did with the family meals, what, Fat Rice was doing with, you know, giving out food for whatever people could afford to pay until they also felt they were putting their staff in danger. Same thing with Honey Butter Fried Chicken. Same thing with Chef Special. You know, I talked to Jason Vincent about that. He said that they were doing gangbusters with their delivery and pickup, but then they just felt like they just couldn't on good conscience, like, put people at risk. And so to see how people have shifted so quickly, you know, whether to stay alive or to put their teams in out of harm's way, it's just been incredible to see, you know, what the industry has done, you know, here and around the country, you know, with feeding people. And, you know, then you also look at the farms and what the farms have done. And like, you're a very farm driven restaurant, like your menu is very seasonal. And I'm sure you've spoken with a lot of your farmers. You know, there's been a lot of lower level discussion. Maggie and I each wrote an article for two different platforms about it, about what the farms are doing and to stay alive. Like, what are you hearing from them and what they're doing to try to keep their, because things keep growing and animals keep being, you know, birthed and
reaching market. Whatnot.
I mean, it's about to be spring anyway.
Yeah.
Quite frankly, those conversations have been some of my really grounding moments, just to hear their positivity. I think farmers are far more grounded than restaurateurs, thank God, because I mean, they're connected to the earth and they're, you know,
and they live in uncertainty every season.
Mm-hmm.
They do, like a hailstorm early in the year can ruin fruit for the whole year, right? And they understand that events like this occur and can massively affect their business. The person who I've been talking to more than any, because she's just always been a huge influence on my life since I was a kid, is Tracy Vowell from Three Sisters Farm.
God, she's
yeah.
And, you know, I kept bitching to her about money, and she was just like, you know, if you talk about money anymore, Erling, I'm not going to talk to you. And I needed to hear that, right? She's like, just stop worrying about the money. Like, all of us are worried about it, but there's nothing we can do. So, you know, I've been getting it. She's not doing CSAs right now, but she's been delivering to home. So I've been getting a little delivery from her. You know, the if this were to ease off here in the next couple of weeks, the vegetable farmers would be in a fair, in a poor to fair position versus a, oh my God, what are we going to do position, you know? Because, you know, but everybody's worried. So what I hear from them is beautiful positivity in the face of this disaster. And it's really good for me to hear on a regular basis. All of them have been incredibly supportive and sagely almost to me. And I really appreciate that.
I had a really interesting conversation with Jamie Davis, who's the head chef at Noisette over at Red and White. And they've started doing really simple family meals once a week, basically cooking through their inventory. But he's also starting to think about how to be able to start ordering ingredients again from farm, just to like, you know, build up the supply chain. One of the things he talked about that I found really interesting was he's been doing Instagram stories. So like if for the family meal that week, he did white coca van. And then he did an Instagram story, here's how you make it. And so he was talking about sort of the role of the chef as empowering home cooks to cook more like chefs in this time. So rather right. than just like hosting a CSA pickup at the restaurant every week or something, maybe saying, asking farmers, like, what are you in surplus of now? What can we make boxes out of? Cook through them and then give kits to home cooks and say, here's the ingredients, here's how to cook it. Because we kind of all have to take some responsibility in building back up our supply chains right now. And like, you know, farmers have products that needs to move. So it was such an interesting and compelling and positive kind of way to think about like how we can all sort of lift each other up a little.
And that's one of the main reasons, that's a great point. And that's one of the main reasons for opening up these family meals sooner rather than later is to get those supply chains moving, right? To like, to make sure that those farms, to make sure that we're ordering from those farmers, just to kind of warm the machine back up again, right? Like when you light a wood oven for the first time, you do it very low and very slow, which I have to do. My ovens have never been off for more than a day at a time. They've been off.
Oh, that's a weird thing to think about.
Yeah.
So, but like we have to grease the wheels a little bit and you know the and we have to make some cash to pay those farmers, cuz those farmers need money, we need money too. And like, again, I hate saying it cuz everybody's like, all you're worried about is money. It's just like we just have to like start bringing some revenue in so that the system just recognizes that we can do this again, right
we're not working on a barter system.
Farmers have to get paid, right? No. Although right yeah. now I am, I'm just like, I'm baking bread because I'm such a chef cliche and all of us are doing it.
Who's got the good like, bread right now on the streets?
Yeah, oh, really.
I trade my neighbors. I got like this little circle from, you know, from a long way away. And I'm like, I got loaves of bread. I'll trade for you. And they're like, we got eggs. I'm like, all right, I'll take eggs.
Let's get it.
I got wine. Okay.
I like
that's
it.
That's great.
Yeah, I love it.
What, speaking of baking bread, you know, with being at home as much as you are and being a chef, what are you cooking? What have you been making at home?
I was hoping we'd get to this because this is the best part of it.
The silver lining again. I mean,
we got to talk about something light and bright. Let's lighten this shit up.
You know, I've been cooking so much.
You're like a cookbook junkie also, so maybe should we go by cook, like what have you been cooking out of lately? Or what are you doing your own things?
Simple French food, first and foremost. Yeah. Richard Olney's book. I've just kind of cooked through like, what am I cooking? I'm cooking a ton of chicken because I think I have 10 frozen whole chickens in my freezer right now. So I defrost one a day. I made two cocoa vans. I've made chicken pilaf. I've made chicken and sausage jambalaya. I've made chicken kung arroz. I made chicken with chicken Brunswick stew and grits from Three Sisters Farm.
You like the dude off Forrest Gump right now. You like chicken and sausage, like, chicken soup. Like
you can't forget that I'm half Creole, right? My dad was born in New Orleans, so I kind of returned to my roots.
Yeah.
When and plus like the Cajuns are so good at like the one pot wonder meal, right? Like they cook everything in one pot because they hate doing dishes. So,
oh
right, like, which I hate doing too.
People is produce fucking dishes. I'm so sick of producing.
We run our dishwasher like every 2 days.
I have a dishwasher, but it's very small, so you have to pack it strategically. Mm-hmm. It fills up really fast. I have to say, I've been revisiting the rotisserie chicken in the past couple weeks because holy shit, it is a gift that keeps giving.
Yeah.
And I don't always
feel like great stock out of bones. Chicken is a beautiful thing.
It is, truly.
And then today I'm going to take all the vegetables and all of the leftovers in my fridge and make chili, right? It's just like, hey, bud, you got way too much stuff in your refrigerator. Like one cup of this, one cup of that. Mm-hmm. And I think I can literally close my eyes, grab all the Tupperware, a couple cans of beans, and cut up some vegetables and make a pretty good chili. So that's going to be the goal tonight. And then I'll start fresh.
That's, a good idea. I might take that idea from you.
Yeah.
People have been stockpiling beans. Let's face it.
Yeah.
Right.
Our bean shelf is stocked.
Yeah, I love it.
Do you feel that this is a time to like, are you experimenting at all? Are you like wanting to stretch your creative chef muscles also? Or are we like pretty comfy? Like we're in comfort zone.
I'm not a big experimenter in general. I don't know how much, I don't know what good stuff comes from experimenting. I think, you know, I think returning to roots always yields, returning to like the OGs always yields better results than like pushing into new and uncharted territory. So I've been, you know.
So you're not pulling out the tweezers and placing the microgreens atop a sous vide chicken?
No. No, I do make pancakes at least 3 times a week, but I'm riding the bike a lot too. Thank God. I'm not losing any weight. I'm just sustaining because I'm eating so many damn carbs that
you can have some of mine, man. Because I packed them on during this quarantine.
Seriously, it's so funny. I was just thinking, I've been working out, like I balance, like every day I either do yoga or like a HIIT class or something online, and I feel like, and my weight is being maintained. I'm just not necessarily toning up because of the amount of booze that we drink every day and carbs we eat.
We're surviving.
We are.
Yeah. I think this is time to practice maximum kindness. Like there's I don't care if I'm fat. I'm fat. You just got to deal with it.
I'm on a one day on, one day off booze rule because the first week and a half were, what can I say? I wasn't on a one day on, one day off regimen.
Yeah, you took it back to sophomore year.
I needed to have a self-intervention. Yeah, sophomore year with a four-year-old, which is the one difference, right? 6:30 in the morning. You didn't see 6:30 in the morning sophomore year, but you do with a four-year-old.
But probably something to like revisit. Like to have some really incredibly concentrated time at home when your kid is super young. I mean, that's huge as a chef and restaurant owner.
You know, he's going to look back on this and he's going to be like, this was great. Totally. Right? Yeah. He's going to be like, mom and dad were home all the time. Dad was cooking every single day. Right. We played air guitar together every single day. Right. We wrestled every single day. And then when he's 20, he's going to be like, do we have to talk about COVID again? I'm going to be like, you have no idea. He's like, again? Why are we talking about this again? That time was great.
Yeah.
I can't imagine what it's like for teenagers. I actually think about that group a lot, right? I can't imagine how hard this is. But for him, he's having a blast. It's great. It's great for him. And I couldn't imagine. I'm super lucky to have him to help me get through this. Right, having him has been just a joy. So,
That's really nice. That's really nice.
Ahead.
No, you go.
I do want to talk about, if it's all right with you guys, to bring it back to a little bit of seriousness. I would like to talk about the other side just a little bit more.
Absolutely.
Because I do think it's important for people to hear how different it's going to be, and to address those fears that that our diners are going to have. We're going to listen to the guidance, and we're going to follow the guidance. But I just hope that most of our clients understand that, like, it's going to be a learning process for everybody on the other side, right? It's going to be a learning process for restaurateurs. It's going to be a learning process for employees. It's going to be a learning process, most importantly, for our customers. You know, whether it be, we're super lucky at PST. We can really put a lot of space in between tables because it's a huge restaurant.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of restaurants that can't do that. And what does that look like, right? And there's a lot of restaurants out there that are going to have to embrace to-go food that haven't done it before. And what does that look like? And you know, God willing, all of these restaurants, as many restaurants as possible, reopen. But it's going to be a tough time to adjust, right? Like, I think we have a year and a half before there's a vaccine of, as you said, really, really, really being scrappy. Because that's the personality trait that's the most rewarded right now for one reason or another. Mm-hmm. And I just really want to preach patience for all the parties involved, right? For myself, for Josh, for our employees, for our customers. Like, this is going to be a learning curve like this. Like, you know, I talk about this all the time. You consistently realize for the last 4 or 5 weeks how lucky we were to live where we are in the time when we do, because we lived in a world of stability. And now we're going to enter just an incredibly volatile time as business people and as employees. And I just hope that, you know, I hope that I have, you know, the grace to be patient. I hope that my employees have the grace to be patient with me. And I hope that my customers have the grace to be patient with all of us as we try to figure out this as fast as possible, but also to know that Josh and I will adjust as fast as we can and change as fast as we can on a regular basis to be hospitality professionals, because we don't know how to do anything else.
Yeah, right? I think, it would be a good point too, also to tell people what they can do right now. Buy merch, buy gift cards, what, like, just because I think that now more than ever, the concept of if you love a place, you should patronize it has never been more true, but we can't in a lot of places we love because they're closed. So what can people do right now that's the most beneficial to you, to others?
It's a great question, Maggie. The most beneficial thing that you can do is choose the smallest mom and pop operation that you love.
Yay! I'm dancing in my seat.
You're right. and look, again, I'm lucky to work with one off. Incredibly lucky. But choose the smallest, like, truly independent restaurant that you love. The Passerotos, the Galitz, the SKYs of the world, that are still doing the parachutes of the world, that are still doing takeout, and buy dinner from them. And then when you buy dinner from them, buy all the other stuff too. Buy the wine, buy the meal kits, buy the merch, all that stuff. Like, those restaurants need, as you said, Maggie, they need cash to function, right? That's the most valuable thing you can do. You can, a lot of these larger groups who have beautiful, beautiful, beautiful employees have GoFundMe pages. You can donate to those GoFundMe pages. Buying gift cards, that's an incredibly important thing that we can all do, is buy gift cards. And the great thing about those is they're going to come back to pay. They're going to pay you back when you use them whenever you can. One off is doing universal gift cards. They're doing gift cards that work across the entire company. From Big Star to the Violet Hour to PST to Blackbird. And the other thing that you can do, which a lot of my most valuable customers have been doing, is they just reach out and see how we're doing, right? Yeah. I think, right, it's like a call or a hello or all that stuff. It's just like, just give us a chance to say, we're hanging in there, which is what we're doing. I really think that goes a really long way. And just, you know, to what I said, when you do order, when you do support, just understand that, like, a lot of these restaurants haven't really been doing to-go or curbside pickup for a long time, and understand that it's a little bit different.
Yeah. And I also like to add that if you are, to any of the listeners out there, you know, if you are going to your local restaurants, if you are getting delivery, if you're going to your grocery stores, first of all, say thank you. Tell people that you appreciate what they're doing, that they're going out of, that they're putting themselves in a little bit of danger by interacting with the public, but also if you can afford to, tip generously, because right now, you know, that's what these everyday people who live paycheck to paycheck, they need cash in their pockets. You know, if you normally tip 15%, tip 18 or 20. If you do 20, tip 25 or 30, if you can, of course.
And if you don't tip, don't order carry out or delivery.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So let's move into our short order, which is our quick fire round. Erling, we are just going to ask you a series of questions that, you know, don't think too hard on the answer. Just give us the first thing that comes to your mind. So first off, what would you be doing if you weren't a chef or a restaurant partner?
I'd be a teacher. Okay. I mean, ideally, I mean, I'd be a professional golfer, but let's be honest, right?
I'd be a teacher. Who is your hero?
My dad.
Okay.
What did you have for breakfast today?
Frozen blueberry waffles.
Ooh.
Lego my ego.
Yeah. What movie will you always watch if you stumble on it while flipping through channels?
I got three. Shawshank Redemption, Good Will Hunting, High Fidelity.
Ooh. Great movies. What if you have one, what is your life motto?
Headlights forward. Don't dwell with the past.
I love that. What song will make you stop whatever you're doing and dance, or at least shake your head?
Use Me by Bill Withers, but I've been doing a series of air guitar videos with Maxwell. So let me expand that. Juice by Lizzo is his personal favorite.
Awesome.
He's a big Lizzo fan. And then I got to say Born to Run.
Right on.
A true dance song.
Totally.
You need that right now, collectively. What is your last request meal? No limitations.
Oh man.
Don't say chicken.
I would say either my dad's gumbo or my dad's pork and beans.
Ooh.
Nice. What would you pair that with? What drink?
Some sort of red wine from the Rhone.
Okay.
Yeah. And what is your favorite curse word?
I don't know if I can say this. I mean, how safe are we here?
We're safe.
You're safe.
It's a safe space.
Yeah.
I think the C word would have to be my favorite curse word.
Wow. You never had that. No. Yeah, I would say don't say that one.
Yeah, that's let's.
Here, no.
I like it though. You set a tone for the future. She did.
Yeah.
I mean, should we redo that? Can you?
No, we can't. No,
perfect.
That stands, friend.
What's done is done. As it is, what is the phrase? As it is written, so it shall be done. Or I don't something like that. Something.
Yes.
And then lastly. Yeah. Lastly, we normally do Sip This, which is the segment where we all taste something together and then critique it. But as we are not doing that, we're not together. I just wanted to give a little shout out to a cool local little company based in Wilmette. It's called Twisted Alchemy. They've been around a few years and they make high quality cold pressed juices that have a long shelf life. A lot of their business was supplying bars and restaurants like Z-Bar at the Peninsula, Federalis, and Cindy's at the CAA with bottled, like, fresh juices with, like, good pH and Brix level. But you can order them online right now at their website. It's twistedalchemy.com. Each bottle, it's 750 milliliters. Each costs about $15 and yields about 10 cocktails. You have to use your own booze. But there's like really fresh flavors like blood orange, pink grapefruit, watermelon. They have lemon and lime sours that you can make margaritas and daiquiris and things like that. So go check them out. And Erling,
talking about drinking, go, like, independent wine shops are still open. go to Perman, go to Red and White, go to Diversity Wine.
Where Gentiles, else? Gentiles, yeah. Printer's Row Wine Shop.
Good. More? Anyone? More?
Andersonville Wine. I think In Fine Spirits.
Beer Temple is still doing beer deliveries. Local breweries are doing curbside and delivery. We just got some really, like, a rad grouping of beers from Pipeworks, which is, like, a really cool-looking space that I want
and if,
have headshots taken in front of it so I look much cooler than I am.
That could be your background next time. And also, like, the there's a delivery app called Drizzly that they source from all the local shops. So I think Drizzly and Minibar also. So you could go online and you could see what their supply is, and you could order for, if you don't know what your favorite local shop is, like you could go in and just patronize something small.
What are your guys' spirits of choice over this? Over this pandemonium, what's the spirit drink of choice?
Well, if it's not
what day
wine, I've been having Negronis.
I'm a gin guy too, right? Gin is the perfect pandemic liquid.
I just said we ran out of gin in the house. I was like, damn, I need some new gin.
Cannot run out of gin right now. You cannot
ran out of gin.
At our house, we do a lot of agave spirits, a lot of mezcal and tequila, but also a lot of bourbon. But last night, it's funny, speaking of gin, I actually changed it up a little bit because I actually have a lot of gin in the house. And I made a gin, watermelon juice using the Twisted Alchemy watermelon juice, squeeze a lime and some, soda water and just, it was delicious.
Well, summertime.
Might I suggest a sake night for all of you too? When you get all your wine, grab some sake and.
Good one. Good.
That's a good call.
That's a good idea.
Pop a couple ibuprofen before you go to bed. You know.
Right.
That's like a perfect now, Erling. But it's fun. Thank you so much for.
You're welcome.
For being honest, for sharing so much. For wanting to talk. This is such an intense time and just
incredibly
so
intense.
Yeah. And we love our restaurant scene. We want to see everybody come through it. And we're so grateful that you took time to talk with us about this. It's such a tough topic and means a lot.
Thank you guys. It was great. It was great. I mean, we have all this stuff bottled up. It was great to,
great
to be able to get it out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll see you guys in a car line soon.
Yay!
That's right.
And thank you everybody for tuning in. And honestly, like so many of you have sent notes and texts saying, you know, wanting to know when the next episode is going to air. And we've missed you too. It was weird, like coming back with our first episode with Mindy Siegel for season two, and then taking basically a month break because of this crisis. But thank you guys for sticking with us. Erling, thank you, Maggie. And Ernest, I love you both. It's so good to be with everybody.
Keep your heads up out there, everybody.
Yay.
Keep headlights forward.
That's right. Bye, guys. Thank you, guys.
Thanks, guys, so much.
Bye. Thank you.
Bye,
guys.
Thanks. Mirror, mirror on the wall.